You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Don't miss First Take Tuesday when we kick off our week of special guests ahead of Super Bowl 55. Jared Allen and George Kittle will both join us, plus a surprise you won't want to miss. That's tomorrow on First Take. They are four of the greatest basketball players ever, and Hoops at HoopsPix only tweeted out an interesting photo naming Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, and Steph Curry as the four most influential players over the last three decades. Many will argue the real debate would be over number one in that span, his heirness or King James. So, Stephen A., talk to me. Who do you think has been the most influential during that time, LeBron or Jordan?
Well, I never put LeBron James ahead of Michael Jordan under any circumstances. But I must confess, in the aftermath of George Floyd's killing and all the social justice issues that have taken place, you start thinking about what the nation needs and what have you. It's not to say that Jordan was silent or voiceless, because he certainly was not. But LeBron being younger, being a part of today's generation with the advent of social media and beyond, taking into account his reach and his willingness to be a face and a voice to so many issues that are very, very pertinent in this nation right now and throughout the world right now, I would have to give him that edge. And I never, ever felt that way before until recently in terms of what's transpired. I always think about pioneers who've led the way, and you never want to dismiss their contributions before you take an opportunity to really appreciate and elevate someone else, because the pioneers who set the table play a profound role. Jordan making it acceptable. First, it started with Magic Johnson, with him and Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson and that magnetic smile and his five championships and being in nine NBA finals and ultimately becoming the incredible businessman that he became once his playing career was over. That paved the way for Jordan to take the world by storm, not just with Air Jordan and the aerial assault and the dynamics that he put forth on the court, but obviously he was the kind of guy that really elevated the NBA's mass appeal, not just appealing to a black audience, but appealing to the masses, which was former Commissioner David Stern's dream, to be quite honest with you. God rest his soul. And so you look at all of those different things, and you want to give Jordan credit where credit is due. But then I think about LeBron and think about, Ali in terms of when he donated money for the exhibit at the Smithsonian Museum. Some of his, the school in Akron and putting the underprivileged kids in Akron, Ohio through school along with their parents and what have you. You know, his philanthropy, his charitable donations, his willingness to give a voice to the voiceless and speaking on some of the issues that he's been willing to speak about. I just right now at this particular moment in time, I would have to say when you look at it in its totality, I've got to give it to LeBron James because of what has transpired. In the immediate past, per se.
I respect that because LeBron James has absolutely led on social issues and has been, just because the circumstances are right for that now, and we're not as right in Jordan's day. There were fewer media outlets. There wasn't social media, so the athlete wasn't as empowered independently as they are today. Nevertheless, LeBron didn't have to choose to be this way. He didn't have to automatically be this way. He chose to be this way and deserves a lot of credit. I would say that when you bring up Ali, there is a difference. Muhammad Ali was willing to make great sacrifice. And in terms of social justice, that's why he became an icon. When the cost started going up for social justice, Ali was willing to pay that premium. Same thing with Kaepernick. Kaepernick was willing to make a sacrifice. And it's been a little bit different for LeBron. The cost of social activism has not been as high for LeBron as for some others. So I don't think that he resonates as an icon in a social justice way, though he absolutely, the way Ali did, or to a lesser extent Kaepernick does, though he absolutely deserves tremendous credit for influence off the court in that way, no doubt. I still say the answer is Jordan here, Stephen A., because 30 years takes you back to 91. Michael Jordan was, you know, at the time, in the process of exploding the NBA and basketball into a worldwide phenomenon. Whether or not it had the biggest economy, it was the hottest sport and fastest growing sport in the world because of Michael Jordan. Even today, his Jordan brand stuff outsells LeBron's, like his sneakers, 5 or 10 to 1. Even today, and speaking of Jordan brand, Stephen A., when you talk about what occurred in the wake of George Floyd's murder, what happened right after that? You know who made the biggest corporate pledge?
Jordan
brand. $100 million over 10 years. So Jordan he exploded basketball. His style was emulated by everyone. Bigs face the basket now in terms of on-court style because everyone wanted to be like Mike. Kobe wore 24, one more than Jordan. LeBron wears 23, all that stuff. In addition, he became a billionaire and a team owner. So though the avenues for kind of influence were not the same as they are today for players in terms of social justice issues, and maybe Jordan didn't have that temperament that LeBron has anyway, in terms of overall influence on and off the court, I still believe Jordan has had the most in the last 30 years.
Certainly I'm not going to dismiss that because I think all your points are points I made in the past and they're incredibly valid and I get that. Not to mention the fact that the very brand that LeBron uses to really take his positions and really elevate it to another level is the brand that Jordan built, which was Nike. Jordan built that brand. So we have to make sure we give credit to Jordan for that as well. I just think that at this particular moment in time, when we talk about impact, there was a time that obviously I always thought that Jordan and others were unfairly maligned for not giving enough of a voice to issues because there are a multitude of ways to skin a cat. And there's so many things that he does behind the scenes on such an incredibly positive level that he should not have been maligned for it the way that people have tried to from time to time. But I think particularly in this day and age, when you consider LeBron's willingness to speak out on such issues and how we lean and depend on him so much to give a voice to a lot of different issues, when you're talking about impact, when you're talking about influence, those things can't be ignored either. And obviously, Jordan had a lot to do with facilitating LeBron being able to do that. So if that was a big reason as to why we want to give Jordan that edge, I'm all for that. But nevertheless, in this day and age, anytime an issue comes about, you're literally waiting to hear what LeBron has to say, particularly as it pertains to African Americans in this country, regardless of what the situation may entail, because he's that big of a figure in this day and age. And obviously the advent of social media may have something to do with that because Jordan didn't have that at his disposal. But nevertheless, I think those are the kind of things that has contributed to the prowess that LeBron James possesses at this particular moment in time. And that's all I'm doing. I'm saying that, you know what, I'll give it to him. But in the same breath, it's because in large part, because of Jordan, that LeBron is in this position. Because if Jordan hadn't done the things that you highlighted, Max, LeBron wouldn't be in the position to do what he's doing.
Sure. And in every era, like, you know, there was no one in the 1950s in sports that was going to influence sports the way figures in the 60s and 70s could, simply because of the time. The time and the place allowed figures like Muhammad Ali to do things that probably would have been impossible, let's say, in the 1940s and 50s, had he come along then. And the same thing with Jordan and LeBron. But something in LeBron's credit, to LeBron's credit, that must be said, and you've mentioned, you've alluded to it, is he has natural leadership qualities on social issues. He's able to express them and do it in a kind of big tent way. He doesn't do it with a kind of vitriol that turns people off. He does it in what athletes always like, that positive way. And he has a kind of real instinct for that. Like, he comes across like a leader who, if he wanted a role in politics after his career, could have it. It seems to me it would be available to him.
Fair enough. All right. Despite being retired for almost 20 years, Michael Jordan still polls as the most popular athlete in America. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
I'm living good to be back in the building that I'm so eagerly waiting to play in. Just a little bored at times, you know, stuff slow with trying to let my Achilles heal and get to the next stage, which is, you know, mobility work. But I'm feeling good. I'm happy to be with my teammates. Obviously, unfortunately, I'm not playing. Kills me every day, but I'm planning on playing for a long time, and I don't want to, you know, have any mishaps come this rehab.
You got a feel for Klay Thompson. Missing two seasons, expected to be back this upcoming season, obviously, coming off that torn left ACL. Max, let me ask you this. Moving forward, are you going over, under 1.5 or more titles for Klay?
I'm going under. I'm going under because, look, I think Klay will be able to get back. You see what happened, Breonna Stewart and Kevin Durant recently. We've seen athletes come back from bad situations, the same injury, and still be really, really good. If not exactly themselves, but it's sort of like it looks like it. And maybe Klay can do that, but by then he'll be almost 32, and he'll take up an enormous percentage of the salary cap. Now, he will join Steph Curry. By the way, if he doesn't get another catastrophic injury, knock wood, that doesn't happen, but it's two in a row now. Now, he'll join Steph Curry, as Stephen A. will call it, the greatest shooting backcourt will be back together. But guys, let's remember, the best version of that team pre-Kevin Durant was lucky to win one championship. Kyrie and Kevin Love both got hurt, or else they obviously lose to that Cavs team. They went six games without Kyrie or Kevin Love with Dellavedova as LeBron's second-best player, Stephen A. And then the best version of that team possible, the 73-win team, lost to the Cavs. Then KD joined the team. It was over, right? But KD's gone. He ain't coming back. Now, this says they have a great front office, very savvy. Wiseman, and you see the effect that Steph Curry has. Wiggins is shooting from the outside. They'll probably be able to, if not turn those guys into great players, flip them into something. But Stephen A., by then, Draymond will be much older. Klay may not be exactly what he was in his very prime. Same thing with Steph. And even if they are, I have enough faith in them to think they're going to get back and win another championship. But more than that is asking almost for a dynasty again. I don't see that happening.
I do. And let me say this again. I loved watching Klay give his commentary and stuff like that. He was funny. And I loved when Steph got on him. And I loved when he got on that dude for the Pistons that stepped out of pocket. I love stuff like that. Having said all of that, I have been on the record saying that Steph Curry is the greatest shooter known to man in the history of mankind. There has never been a greater shooter. Klay Thompson is one of the top five shooters in the history of basketball. Klay Thompson, if he never played another game, is a Hall of Famer. Klay Thompson going to Hall of Fame right now without playing another game. In his career, he is a Hall of Famer right now. And when I think about the two of these guys together, the marksmen that they were. Remember, Max, weeks ago we were having a debate and we were talking about Damian Lillard, who we both love, Dame Dollar the Man, big-time show against Chicago over the week, by the way, Dame Dollar against Steph Curry, and I talked about how Dame Dollar shot 40% from three last year. Steph Curry has done it for his entire career. You know who else has done it for his entire career? That would be Klay Thompson.
I do.
All 8 years in the NBA, he has shot better than 40% from three-point range. He's got a 19-point career scoring average. He's averaged over 20 his last 5 years in the NBA. And by the way, Wiseman is a rookie averaging like 12 and 6. Max, he's shooting 40% from three-point range. He's hit 9 of his 22 three-pointers this year.
Wiggins is,
I mean,
too.
Damn. I mean, I'm just saying damn. It's like they got a contagious effect other than Kelly Oubre because he can play, but they can't get him to shoot threes, right? But other than him, I mean, my God. Listen, I got news for you.
Steph creates
space.
If
Klay Thompson comes back healthy and Steph Curry is healthy with Klay and Wiseman and Draymond and them, I reserve the right to revisit this conversation about whether or not the Warriors are going to win the chip next year. I mean, immediately. That's
Let's
how
not get
elite
hysterical.
Of shooters that they are. You can't teach,
you know, Klay,
this. You can't make it up.
Klay is tough as nails. You know, Michael Thompson raised an old-school throwback kind of tough-as-nails two-way player. There's no doubt about it. And here's a return of an oldie, Stephen A., from, you know, a classic from My Greatest Hits, Volume 1. You know who Coach Mackey at my daughter's skills development program, Steady Buckets? You know who he uses as a model to teach shooting more than anyone else by far is Klay Thompson. Klay's shot is studied by coaches teaching people how to shoot.
They can win the chip.
Thank you for extending the segment for that, Max. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
In celebration of Black History Month, First Take is bringing you on an HBCU tour. Each Wednesday in February, we'll check in with a different school starting this Wednesday at Stephen A.'s alma mater, Winston-Salem State University. So tune in all month right here on First Take as we recognize Black History Month.
The first part of being smart is knowing what to do. We're gonna have systems in place that are easier to learn. All right, complicated to the defense or offense that they're going against or the special teams group they're going against, but easy for us to learn. Because when we can put that, when we can learn our system and we can get good at our system, then our talent can take over. Less thinking equals talent take over, but we need to have systems in place, and we will have systems in place to do so. As far as the starter, haven't really thought about that yet, and naming a starter that hasn't even crossed my mind. Again, just trying to evaluate the players on our team and get the staff together.
Ryan Clark joining us. Nick Sirianni taking over a team that ranks 24th in total offense. I see those eyes, Rye. Max, he's not worried about who's going to be quarterback, obviously. We'll just keep it on Ryan's face.
Hasn't crossed his mind.
I mean, that hasn't even crossed his mind for 1 second who might possibly be the quarterback. Did you want to jump in here, Stephen A.?
Yeah. I'm saying, Max, would you mind if I led this conversation, Max? Because I don't have much say, but would you mind if I take over? The best thing could say about Nick Sirianni's press conference is that he wasn't exactly like Adam Gase, who showed up to the Jets press conference looking high. Now, you couldn't say that, but let's be honest. Didn't the thought cross our minds? He looked like a deer in headlights. I don't know what the hell he was talking about. He was mumbling his words. I agree with my colleague at the Philadelphia Daily News, Marcus Hayes, where he talked about him lying. You didn't even think about the starting quarterback. The thought never even crossed your mind. You took the Eagles' job. You interviewed for the Eagles' job. You took the Eagles' job. Oh, by the way, your former boss in Indianapolis, who's the head coach there, where was he before? He was in Philadelphia as your offensive coordinator slash quarterback coach, guiding them to a Super Bowl championship with a backup in Nick Foles. And you take this job after working under him, and it never crossed your mind about whether or not Carson Wentz or Jalen Hurts would be your start. You didn't even cross it. As Marcus Hayes pointed out, you lied. And Philadelphia, better than most places, has a BS meter that, I mean, they can pick up on it like clockwork. And this is a bad start for him. And all I'm going to say before handing it to you, Max, is this. As a guy that worked in Philadelphia for 17 years for the Philadelphia Inquirer, when you are a head coach and you're the man assigned to talk to the media on a daily basis and you come across as that, my prayers are officially extended to Nick Sirianni, because my goodness, are you going to need all the prayers you can get, because this was a horrible start and the media in Philadelphia is going to be waiting for this man on a daily basis for the foreseeable future. If there was ever a press conference not that you did not want to show up unprepared for, it was that one. Good luck to that, brother.
How does Nick Sirianni look after his first news conference? Like a puppet. Like a puppet. That's what he looks like. This is the Mike McCarthy situation in Dallas on steroids. Just like I said, Jerry Jones, I'm going to hire anybody. We had Jimmy Johnson on the show. Really, the Cowboys are suffering from the curse of Jimmy Johnson. Won a couple Super Bowls, got too much credit. Jerry's ego couldn't handle it. Got rid of him, bring in Switzer, won with Johnson's players, and never since then, right? And since then has avoided, with the exception of Parcells briefly, the big personality man in charge who would get credit. And it seems to me what's going on in Philadelphia is a version of that, but on steroids. It's not so much about the ego and getting the credit. It's that Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, and Howie Roseman, the GM, want someone they can control, period. According to that same Marcus Hayes column in the Philadelphia Inquirer, Stephen A., published yesterday, I suggest people check it out. He said that after 5 years of Peterson taking his orders, he came at them with, hey, I'd like to choose my own personnel or at least decide when and where, who's going to play what. And a couple weeks later, he's gone. As soon as he stopped being a puppet, he was gone. And what I say about Peterson's press conferences last year, especially as it pertained to Carson Wentz, I told you, it sounded like he didn't have autonomy. It sounds like he couldn't make decisions. That's what's going on. Dysfunction always starts at the very top. You want to see a dysfunction? And Jeffrey Lurie's been praised oftentimes as a great owner in American team sports. He's lost that distinction. This is a debacle at this point. And you can see that they hired a guy who was not at liberty even to make decisions about basic stuff pertaining to the team. When Peterson finally wanted control back because the Carson Wentz thing went off the rails, they got rid of him. They replaced him with a guy who they believe they can control. And the first press conference sends a message to Eagles fans loud and clear. They found their man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think so this is the reason, too, we pay more attention to press conferences this year than we have in years past. And you hate to bring this name up every time a coaching vacancy is filled, but it's Eric Bieniemy. Because you think about some of the press conferences we've seen him in. You think about some of the post-game interviews when you look back to after the Super Bowl when asked by, I believe it's Steve Wyche, about what that meant to Andy Reid. You think about all the things his players say as a leader, as a communicator, as a builder of men. And so now when we see these other guys, these other coaches who get these jobs, we say to ourselves, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to learn why this dude was so much better than Eric Bieniemy, why this dude is the pick for this job. And we've bit off kneecaps and we've knocked out teeth. And now we've written statements to give and we don't even know the statement. Now, here's what I know about football coaches. And I played for a coach who wasn't necessarily a great communicator publicly. He also wasn't a great communicator privately. That team was really bad. And when I was done with that team continued to be bad. And I thought that was a part of it, the leadership, the galvanizing the troops, as Stephen A. often mentions. And so when I hear him speak, like, I know this. If I asked Stephen A. to speak about journalism, if I ask him to speak about broadcasting, if I ask Max to do the same, speak about boxing, if I ask Molly to speak about hosting, y'all don't need a sheet to tell me how y'all feel about that. Y'all don't need a sheet to tell me about the way you go about your day to excel at that job. If you ask me about football, all the reasons I love it, why I approached it the way I did, why I see it the way I see it, I could talk to you for 4 hours and I would never need a piece of paper. And if I was going to get the opportunity to take over a job where they had a quarterback controversy, whether I had autonomy or not, I would have an answer because I know you're going to ask me that. A huge part of being a head coach is being prepared. And though he had a sheet to read, I don't know if it was written by him or written by his agents, he wasn't prepared. And you better be prepared in Philly when you're taking over a bad team. You're taking over a team that's cap-strapped. You're taking over a team that has a quarterback controversy. You're taking over a team in a city where people don't like BS, where people don't deal with losers well. And the first time you come off as a loser. Now, Darius Leonard came to this guy's defense. I think I saw Torrey Smith say something. Not having a great initial press conference doesn't make you a bad football coach. It doesn't mean that this team can't excel under your tutelage, under your leadership. But it sure as hell is a bad start when you're coming into a situation where you're replacing a head coach who already won a Super Bowl. And now you know, and now the rumors come out and the reports come out that that coach wanted to move on to a different quarterback. And they said, oh, no, you can't make that decision. We got two different things happening in the NFL right now. The Philadelphia Eagles chose Carson Wentz over their coach. The Los Angeles Rams chose their coach over their quarterback. Now we're going to get to see in 2021 who was right.
Well, that much is true. And you know what? And I don't have a problem. As much of a talent-based guy as I am, Ryan, I don't have a problem with Los Angeles picking their coach over their quarterback because you have a coach that's won 67% of his games over a four-year period. I don't have a problem with that. I had a problem with Doug Peterson not being chosen over Carson Wentz because of things that Max and others had said as it pertained to Carson Wentz mm-hmm. being a bit hard-headed, having a license to circumvent the coach. And then when you do your homework and you learn even further that, again, Doug Peterson wanted to be his own man. He was speaking up for himself. He wanted to speak to pick his own staff, et cetera, et cetera. I am shocked that the Jeffrey Lurie that I knew, that I've known for many years, in all my years covering the Philadelphia Eagles, when Andy Reid was there, and we know that Andy Reid is his own man, I am shocked that that Jeffrey Lurie appears to be a guy, according to the reports, that him alongside Howie Roseman wants to pick your staff, wants to tell you who to play, wants to do right. all of these different things. That's not the Jeffrey Lurie I know. It's not the Jeffrey Lurie that I've spoken to throughout the years, even though we haven't spoken in a few years. That's not the guy that I knew covering the Philadelphia Eagles for the Philadelphia Inquirer and Philadelphia Sports for that newspaper. That's not him. So to hear that this is what they wanted from Peterson, to hear that other dudes were passed up because they were their own men and they were not going to be, you know, the Josh McDaniels, the Todd Bowles, the Eric Bieniemies of the world, were not going to be told what to do at every single turn, and that Nick Sirianni is the guy that's there now and this is the reason why, it's kind of surprising to me that Jeffrey Lurie would allow or even implement, be an instigator of that kind of leadership, Max.
That's right. That's right. Because Lurie had, as you point out, as someone who covered him up close, but even just nationally, had a sterling reputation. Lurie's considered one of the best owners. I don't think we can say that anymore. I don't think that's the perception at this moment. And think about what a bad spot the Eagles are now in with Carson Wentz. Whatever you want to say about Goff, maybe he didn't hit Wentz's highs as an individual performer. We never looked at him and said, that's the best player in the league, as we briefly did with Wentz several years ago at this point. But Goff was more consistent. Goff made two Pro Bowls. Goff got to a Super Bowl, and he had a big contract. He didn't disintegrate the fabric of the team, and yet they just traded two firsts and a third and Goff for Stafford, who's talented, but ain't Deshaun Watson exactly, right? And by the way, also reports that they were making a run at Aaron Rodgers, couldn't get him, went to Stafford. What does this mean for the Eagles? They held on to Carson Wentz for so long. If it takes you two firsts and a third to get out of Goff's deal, what's it going to take to get out of Wentz's deal? Because one thing we see, the offense works better with Jalen Hurts. Clearly. Not close.
Let me hand this over to you, Ryan, by saying this. And Max, you'll appreciate this as well. If there indeed is that change that has taken place in Philadelphia, it has to be the curse of Chip Kelly. Remember, Chip Kelly comes on board. It's an absolute disaster, but Howie Roseman was moved out of the mix to give that power to Chip Kelly. So once Jeffrey Lurie made that mistake, rather than remembering what he had with Andy Reid, unfortunately, it appears, I don't know, but it appears he's remembered more what he had with Chip Kelly. So he brings Howie Roseman back into the mix. And since he handed that control back to Howie Roseman after once confiscating it from him, he feels beholden to Howie Roseman, what Howie Roseman wants to do, even if that means usurping the authority and circumventing the head coach. That appears to be what the problem is, guys, based on what y'all are breaking down to me. And then, in fairness to you, Max, what you've been saying
for the last few months. I think that analysis is probably right.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, that's a huge issue, though, right? Because you feel that in the locker room. The players understand that. The players understand when the coach isn't making the final call, when the coach doesn't have the final decision on who plays and who doesn't. Because when that coach has the pulse of the team, he understands who can help me win. And we heard Jason Kelce say it during the season, if we are making decisions that are not based on winning football, you are making the wrong decisions. And if you go back to now Carson Wentz or to Roseman and Lurie choosing Carson Wentz over Doug Peterson, that's not a winning football decision. Picking a coach that can be your puppet, picking a coach that you can manipulate, that's not a winning decision. And as these decisions begin or continue to be made, and you heard Mac talk about disintegrating the fabric of a team, this is how you disintegrate the fabric of an organization. Well, this is how you find yourself in a spot not winning for years. And that's where the Eagles are headed.
It could be, guys. It could be that when Jason Kelce was going off, because remember, they all had a lot of love for Peterson when they were winning, when they won that Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of love for him when they were going to the postseason. All of a sudden, they speak out. Guess what? Maybe they weren't speaking about Peterson at all. Maybe they were speaking about upstairs.
Fair enough. All right, let's keep it moving, guys. We are less than a week away from Super Bowl 55, Patrick Mahomes and Tommy Brady. Here are the latest odds to win MVP of the big game. No surprise, the quarterbacks are at top, but tied for third. Talk about those weapons Mahomes has. Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce. Max, tell me this. Who's the most important non-quarterback playing in the Super Bowl?
It's going to be Travis Kelce for a number of reasons. The number Tyreek Hill did on the Bucs when they first linked up, especially the first quarter, means you ain't going to see single coverage on Tyreek Hill. Like, if that's what the Bucs do, God bless them, but I do not expect that. And the Bucs secondary's been all over everyone. They've blanketed everyone, and the entire defense at all three levels. They can create turnovers. They can get to the quarterback, the whole thing. But I cannot imagine they don't bracket Tyreek Hill. You got to send more resources his way. Now, Patrick Mahomes is missing his two tackles, his left and right tackle. And they're not just ordinary guys. Mitch Schwartz has been an absolute stud. He was just named to the PFF, Pro Football Focus's all-second team for the last decade, all-decade team, second team. And Fisher was the number one overall pick. Been to a couple of Pro Bowls. They're missing. So what does that mean? The run game, which is just mediocre, is going to get a little worse. Protection for Mahomes, because the Bucs want to try and get him with four, is going to get a little worse. The time Mahomes has is going to go down, and Tyreek Hill is going to be bracketed. That means Travis Kelce, the tight end, is going to have to do all types of stuff, not just catching passes, blocking, and everything. I expect him, who is all world, I expect Kelce to have a great game, and the Chiefs are going to need it if they want to win.
Well, Kelce's going to have a great game, but I think the most important non-quarterback weapon is going to be Tyreek Hill. I just think he's electrifying. Five times this year, he's had 100-plus receiving yards. During the regular season, we know what that one, what one of those was. It was 269 yards against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah.
207 yards on seven receptions and two touchdowns in the first quarter.
First quarter.
One time he backpedaled into the end zone. Another time he backflipped into the end zone.
Backflipped.
This is how much he toyed with them. Then we get to the postseason. The postseason, obviously, is more important than the regular season. Those are where two of his 100-plus receiving yards came. It was 110 against Cleveland, 172 against Buffalo. The bigger the moment, this brother shines. When we talk about that pass, Max, that I called damn near Hail Mary in the Super Bowl when Patrick Mahomes was looking below average for the first 3.5 quarters, who the hell caught that pass? It was Tyreek Hill. This is what he does. And I don't give a damn what kind of coverage you are. Cat quick, you watch him against Buffalo and some of the moves he made after the catch. It's like, my God, he just moves at a different speed. And just the cutbacks, the elusivity. This dude is so special. I don't see any answer for him. They can try. I think they will, obviously. I don't know if there's anything that they're going to be able to do with Tyreek Hill. I really don't.
Yeah, when you look at those two dudes, right, you think about what they have been throughout the season, both over 1,400 yards, both dominating in the playoffs, 100-yard receiving games for both of them in each of the last two playoff games. And I don't know. See, I don't get to come to the meeting because I'm already working, which is good because I could just come on and say whatever crap I want, because I think the most important non-quarterback is Todd Bowles. And the reason I say that is the reason that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are in the playoffs has nothing to do with the TB that plays offense. It's the TB that's the defensive coordinator of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's the three turnovers or the three interceptions you get against Drew Brees and the one forced fumble that's forced by Antoine Winfield, picked up by Devin White. It's picking off the ball late in the half against Aaron Rodgers. It's not giving up points on three turnovers by Tom Brady, only giving up 6 points throughout that game, being able to get pressure. Now, what are you going to do to adjust to what Stephen A. was talking about in the first game? The fact that you couldn't stop Tyreek Hill early, the fact that we understood each and every play that he was going to be matched up with Carlton Davis and you were going to be in a single high safety. Will you go to two-man? Will you play some cover two? How will you affect the quarterback with both tackles being out of the game? This is going to be about Todd Bowles, his willingness to adjust, and the timeliness of his calls when facing the best quarterback we've ever seen. And no matter what happens in this game, I think we look back and if...
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Max. I got something to say, but go ahead.
I was going to say, that's the thing, and we debated it earlier. That's why, to me, like, Patrick Mahomes has to be Superman to win this game. If you replace Patrick Mahomes with most other quarterbacks, the Bucs would be heavy favorites. I mean, they should be. Brady has a plethora of weapons on offense. He has a healthier offensive line than Mahomes, who's missing, again, both of his Pro Bowl starting tackles. You know, you look at the team, it's not like Brady doesn't have a lot of options, even if Mahomes' top options are better. And the defense, there's no comparison. The Bucs, as you mentioned, have been lights out this entire playoffs, playing defense, all three levels, and they create turnovers. The thing about Tyreek Hill, Stephen A., you pointed it out, you started to, he can run a little slant and take it to the house. No question, but I have to believe, given the limited time I think Patrick Mahomes is going to have to throw in this game, I have to believe that his tight end, his all-world pass-catching tight end, is going to be a bigger factor than Tyreek Hill, who they know they have to put two guys on Tyreek Hill.
Well, I don't blame you for that, Max, because if we have to lean on somebody, particularly their decision-making, we certainly want to give major, major props for Travis Kelce. Y'all just follow him and y'all realize what I'm talking about. His decision-making is impeccable.
Man.
That's number one. Let's get that out the way first. Number two, here's the deal.
High on the Wonderlic.
I got to throw this out there because I don't know if y'all know who Charlie Mack is. Charlie Mack, you all always see him with Will Smith. He's one of those who guys. He knows every damn body. He's one of my boys. For the last 3 weeks, I've been receiving nothing but one text from him over and over. I got like 40 text messages from him. It says the same thing. The greatest football story ever told, TB12, Super Bowl 55 MVP. He swears, so he's talking about what Tom Brady is going to do. You, RC, is talking about what the defense is going to do. Here's my only reservation. Tampa Bay's number one against the run, but they're playing a team that don't care about running the football. Kansas City will throw all day. And Kansas City, with their passing attack, is going against the 21st-ranked passing defense in the National Football League in Todd Bowles' passing defense. And you got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce and Mecole Hardman and Sammy Watkins with Bieniemy and Andy Reid going up against the 21st-ranked pass defense? That concerns me, Ryan. That concerns me.
But that's the point, right? And that's why Todd Bowles is the most important. Listen to all those things you just said. Mecole Hardman, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Robinson, like they have everybody offensively from a skill player position. So how do you combat it? How do you win? We've seen that standing across from them, playing man-to-man, thinking that I'm better than what Kansas City has, that doesn't work. And so we're either going to come in here and say Kansas City had a great game on offense and they won the whole dang thing, or we're going to say Todd Bowles had a masterful plan defensively, they turned the football over, and they pulled the upset on the Kansas City Chiefs. Like, that's what it's about. It's not going to be about how great Tom Brady plays. I expect Tom Brady to play relatively well, but it doesn't matter that you just play well against the Kansas City Chiefs offensively because they are so explosive. They can
do so much.
Yeah, the
Bucs put up a lot of points.
Todd Bowles has to step up.
Last half dozen games or so, maybe even more, Bucs put up a lot of points. The Bucs are a much better balanced
decision
team.
Decision-making. Yeah. Let's remember
that. Let me get in one more debate. Stephen A., you're out of control.
Should have been a quarterback.
Settle down. All right.
Hey, Kayla.
Let's go to Motown.
Go
this man, he's something else. I can't take him anywhere. The Lions are sending franchise quarterback Matthew Stafford west to play for the Rams, who will trade Jared Goff back to Detroit in return. Sources telling our Adam Schefter, the Lions will also receive a third-round pick in 2021, a first-round pick in 2022, and a first-round pick in 2023. Stephen A., is this trade good or bad for the Rams?
I don't think it's bad. Now, their decision-making is a bit questionable, and I understand that. Nevertheless, I still say it wasn't that bad, and here's the reason why. I've got the number one defense in the National Football League. I got a coach that's won 67% of his games and has taken them to the playoffs 3 of the 4 years he's been there with a winning record every single year. They believe they have the pieces around a good quarterback to win it all. So you went all in. Now, if Matt Stafford was a guy that's going to play one more year and then he'll be done, I got it. But as a quarterback that you see as your starting quarterback in all likelihood for the next 5 years, worth a couple of first-round picks, meaning late first-round picks, I would say yeah at the quarterback position. And that is why I don't have a problem with Matthew Stafford, with the Rams making the decision that they made to get Matthew Stafford.
Yeah, I think it was a bad trade. Now, I think they'd be better in the short run at least because Stafford's better than Goff, right? And that's the only player they gave up. But the Rams' best player is Aaron Donald. You don't find him in the second or third round, period. You find guys like Aaron Donald high up in the first round. And when's the next time they're going to pick in the first round? Like 2024, 25? You know, this has got to work. They took a good quarterback, and they're hoping he'll be great in the right situation. And my point is they better be right. Guys, it just seems to me Goff plus two firsts and a third is a lot to pay for Stafford. It looks to me like they played poker and lost.
Yeah, listen, this is about war, right? Wins above replacement. He hasn't been worth that many wins in Detroit above his replacements. Is he going to be worth that many wins over Jared Goff, who took you to a Super Bowl already? I don't love this trade. I think it's kind of, and Mike Tannenbaum called it irresponsible this morning on Get Up. You use first rounders to get Pro Bowlers. I get it. And so you feel like, and you feel like that you have a first round, not only first round talent, a Pro Bowl caliber talent in Matthew Stafford. If you don't win a Super Bowl in the next 3 years, this trade killed your team because you don't have first round picks. You'll never get to rebuild. It's this team or nothing. And I don't know if they'll have what it takes to win it all.
Well, if they get to the Super Bowl, but they don't necessarily win it, if they get to some NFC championship games, I'm not going to consider that a failure.
You did that with Goff.
Well, you did it once. And you've gone and you've nosedived. And you've nosedived.
Traded the farm. All right, tomorrow, Jared Allen, George Kittle, and a huge surprise for you. Don't miss First Take. RC, Max, Stephen A. Have a great day. Talk tomorrow.